Welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. Last month, the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore issued a report on the state of downtown. Downtown is one of the few places in our city that has seen an increase in people living there, and with its museums and sports venues and libraries and restaurants, it of course remains a destination for many locals and visitors. But like other cities around the country, the adoption of hybrid work has led to challenges for many of the businesses that depended on workers in the pre-pandemic era. Shalonda Stokes is the president of the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore, and she joins me here in Studio A, and we'd love to hear your take on the state of downtown Baltimore. Do you live or work downtown? Do you hang out there? How do you think it's going, and what do you think should happen downtown moving forward? You can give us a call here at midday, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. Shalonda, it's great to see you.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for having me in studio, I might add. It is great to be back, and I can tell you, based on your opening, I live there, I work there, I'm excited about there, and so look forward to getting a number of the questions today.
Yeah, it's, you know, downtowns all over the country are, you know, going through these incredible transformations. Let's begin by, tell us what the perimeters, the geographic boundaries of what you all consider downtown to be.
Thank you for asking, because I think downtown is a little bit different to everybody, and in referencing the report that we're talking about, the state of downtown, that report, we do a 1 mile radius from Light and Pratt Street. Mm-hmm. And so that enters into a lot of the various downtown neighborhoods. That allows us to compare downtown Baltimore with other cities. And we're a part of this larger organization, the International Downtown Association. And so that allows us to look at trends. How do we compare to ourselves and others across the country? So those are the boundaries. Every neighborhood that's in that, in those boundaries, we consider a part of downtown. And then we have an immense responsibility also for the core. Mm-hmm. And so the heart, which is traditionally called the Central Business District, then we layer additional services of clean and safe and really making sure we're adding extra love to that area as well.
So it goes, for example, north up to as far as Peabody, the
yep,
Walters
thinking about
Art
the
Museum. Train,
yep, the train station all mm-hmm. the way over there, Harbor East, Harbor Point, think down to Pitt
Down
Town.
By, you know, Camden Yards,
absolutely,
all that stuff.
Yeah. The sports. So all of that is what we talk about in our downtown.
Yeah. There's so many things. I mean, I was amazed in this report to see the inventory of things. There are 26 museums.
26 museums.
That's a lot. I mean, I was trying to think, can I name...
Maybe we should put that on the site as a part of it, right?
I can't. I mean, I can name four or five, but boy, that's, you know, that's really great.
We are the hub of government, of culture, of art. You talked about a growing residential base, over 127,000 employees. This is everybody's downtown. And so although it's a neighborhood, we also want to make sure there's no other place like it in the city.
Mm-hmm. And it remains, of course, the main economic engine.
It does.
For the city.
For the city and state.
I mean, give us some of the numbers. In terms of the tax base of this downtown, you know, mile radius that we're talking about.
For some of it, and I don't have the specifics. I will make sure I get the exact numbers around the tax base for what it is. But we know in terms of hotel and restaurant tax, business tax and all of those, this is where the base of that exists.
But the property
downtown
taxes are, I think, somewhere around $122 million of the city
of
budget.
The city's base. It is.
That's huge.
It is.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
is.
So what happens downtown really is going to affect everything in the city.
It does.
Areas outside of the city, just because it's such an economic fundament of the city.
It's an economic fundament, and it's also a reflection of the city. And so you start to think about that intersection of everything, the most transit connected. And so you get all of Baltimore that's in there. And then people who want to give voice and people who want to, you know, make money. And so this, we get downtown right as our city. This is a part that really reflects what our state can do.
Now, of course, we mentioned, you know, at the very top that with fewer people working in the offices
yes.
downtown, that really affects all of the businesses, the dry cleaners, the cafes, the banks, I mean, the places that people would go during their lunch break or, you know, for breakfast before they go to the office. You have a program called Boost, which is specifically geared towards Black-owned businesses and getting them a foothold
right.
downtown. How does that work?
No, so a couple things. Thank you. Starting off with the first part, you're right. So the landscape of how people work has changed. people are looking some to work from home, and there's statistics and data that show, you know, positives and negatives around all of it. But what we know is that means our office environment has changed. People are looking to take over less space quite often, so it means there's a conversion of that space. I know we were ahead of the game with some of the residential conversions coming into downtown, but we know that it requires a mix. Large business, small business, residential, all of that. And so coming in, especially post-COVID, with the BOOST program, which stands for Black-Owned and Operated Storefront Tenancy, it was an opportunity to do a couple of things. One, we knew that ground-level vacancy had increased, right? You have these buildings, you have this ground-level vacancy. And when you have ground-level vacancy, it doesn't feel as safe. It doesn't feel as walkable or inviting.
And in some of those buildings, there still are people on the higher floors. But the stores that were down at street level had closed.
Right. So the walkability and how you feel in that environment doesn't feel the same. So what we could do with BOOST is work to fill some of those spaces, but also be very intentional about how we supported our Black and brown businesses, infusing them with capital, infusing them with resources, working with the landlords to help get reasonable rents that filled their spaces, but also created opportunity for growth within that program. So that has been a flagship. We are actually launching a new one. We call it a BOOST Light version of that at Harbor Place at the end of this month.
For temporary businesses, you know, until Harbor Place gets itself figured out. And we'll talk about Harbor Place in a second. But now, aren't these businesses, though, going to encounter the same problems, the same challenges that the ones who closed up encountered?
Right. So there are a couple of things. So part of what we want to do in building this program is build on what works. So they're selecting businesses who there is still a need, understanding that what's happening to the environment post-COVID is important. So being intentional about how we select them. The other thing is many of these businesses, you know, first generation or so, we want to make sure that they're building on the learnings from businesses who are around and who have survived. And so our board and other partners, there's an accelerator that we put around them to help increase their success. After the first cohort, the first 12 months after the first cohort came, they had reported revenues increase of 300%. And so part of it is how do we sustain it? How do we, you know, build on all of those things to make it work? And to what you said earlier, it's an ecosystem. It's not just having them there. It's the 41,000 residents. And we know that with the state center relocation, we have 5,000 employees who are coming in from the state. And so it's how do we make sure that we get people in, that we are creating the amenities to support those people who are there, and our boosters provide some of that as an amenity.
Shalonda Stokes is the president of the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Love to get your take on downtown. If you live there, if you work there, if you go there, if you don't go there because for some reason you're turned off by the notion of going downtown. Let's talk about that. How come that is? 410-662-8780, our email midday at WIPR.com. So there is a trend for more pedestrian traffic, more people. You mentioned the 41,000 residents in this downtown area. How does that compare with, say, 10 years ago? I mean, it's up, right? I mean, it's more people are moving into that area than almost any other area in the city.
More people. We're the only census tract that's really grown in this area, and we're very intentional about that. I know Downtown Partnership did a study that really looked at what we could even absorb because we really want to make sure that we are growing to that base. And we can absorb almost a little more than 1,000 residents each year through 2025.
Yeah. So it's going to keep trending.
It's keep trending. And that, I mean, that's a part of it in creating these new neighborhoods, these vibrant ecosystems. They are a mix. There's business, there's residential, there's placemaking. I mean, you talk about really what's happening now. You have businesses and people who can work from home, but they also want to engage. And so we're looking at how do we activate the public spaces? How do we create things in place for people to come and engage?
So what's then behind it? Is there a demographic, a certain demographic? Is it young? Is it old? Is it Black? Is it white? Is it, you know, who's moving downtown, whether regardless of where they're working? They may be working downtown, but they also, as you mentioned, may be working remotely, but they live downtown.
But they live. And the good thing is there is a real mix that's happening. Now, there are, you know, naturally in downtown, you have a lot of the emerging leaders in development. You have the University of Maryland, Baltimore, where you have an influx of students who are in there. You have a number of people who work at the medical institutions and some of the businesses that are downtown. So you have a progressive movement of sort of the creative class of people who are in there. The great thing, though, is we started to dig into it more, you find more families. That's why we know we need to make sure that we are meeting the needs that families have. You know, we have Port Discovery and some of those other museums, but what they're saying is we want to make sure that there's a place for us to just go to the playground and do some of those family-type environments as well. And so looking at how we redesign and reimagine downtown to support that mix.
And there's this term, I think it's called agglomeration, where people, you know, are working in one city, but they're managing people in another city, or they're working for people. They're being managed by somebody in another city. My wife works at Johns Hopkins. Her boss in the communications and marketing department lives in Kentucky. She only met this person like for the first time after working for her for a year or so just this week. I mean, it's amazing. So people are just all spread out all over the place. So Baltimore can make a pitch,
affordability. Exactly.
But you don't have to live in New York if you work for a company in New York.
Amazing assets. Like, we have all of that. And to your point, that's where we start to look to target. What's really great about how we are collaborating unlike ever before. We're looking at how, you know, Downtown Partnership, as an example, works with the Baltimore Development Corporation, works with the Greater Baltimore Committee and Visit Baltimore, so that we're taking all of that data and really looking at how we build on it for each other.
And is this the kind of thing, like Live Baltimore, I know, used to have a thing where
Live Baltimore, absolutely.
Right. They used to have a thing. They used to have parties in Union Station in Washington. And they would attract people and talk to them about the advantages of living in Baltimore, even though they worked in Washington, because the cost of living in Baltimore was so much more affordable than in Washington. Is anybody doing that kind of thing now, saying you could live in Baltimore and work in Phoenix? You know,
And what I love about, and that's why I said the collaboration, Annie Millie over there is doing some very innovative programs like that. And part of what we know, and this is where I say the working together, things like the Tech Hub designation give us an opportunity to also be very specific about who we're looking to attract. And then we pair that with residential incentives and other things. I know some of our employers, just in recent weeks and talking with Annie, are just doing some amazing incentives around having their employees stay here and be here. And that's how we really grow the ecosystem.
We have a listener who says in Baltimore, 57% of renters are dealing with their housing cost burden, which means they're paying more than 30% of their income on housing. So a third of all renters are spending more than half of their income on housing. So that's too much to spend on rent or a mortgage. How is the downtown residential development addressing that longstanding and particular problem, which is actually ends up being a public health crisis?
It really does. I can say for us, one of the initiatives that we've had and have Guardian House and a couple of other units that are coming on, affordable housing is very important. And I know that there are varying levels of affordable housing. But we've been very intentional about supporting organizations to make sure that between that and workforce, we're able to create opportunities for everybody to be able to live downtown.
Because the developers who are building all these housing, when they're converting former office buildings, most of the time there are requirements for a certain percentage of the units to be less than market rate, called affordable housing.
They are. And then there are other developers, more nonprofit type, who are really specific and focused on leveraging grant opportunities like Project Core and other things to create opportunity where they can be a little more flexible with the pricing.
Shalonda Stokes is the president of the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. So Vigdis in Federal Hill sends us an email, says, I was just in London, and there were many express-style supermarkets in all neighborhoods offering basics. Since downtown Baltimore is growing in population, why can't there be something similar here that would limit traffic congestion, too? Supermarkets are an issue. It's hard to attract supermarkets to any city. There aren't a whole lot of them, you know, in that central business district downtown. What's your pitch to supermarket
purveyors? I'm going to tell you, that is a key. I think we all agree that that's something that we need. And what he's talking about there in London is something that's worth exploring. I know early on, part of the reasons that we're really excited about getting the number of residents up and other things, it really helps with our pitch to get supermarkets in the area to talk about what we can stand. That type may be more of what we're able to do, but we are being very intentional. A number of us even looking at how we bring in, partner, do urban type experiences that are in here, because we do need to create more opportunities for food within the downtown area.
Yeah, because we have another question about that from Stephanie, who says, I moved here about a year ago, and she's in Fed Hill, evidently, and that's a grocery store desert. But there's lots of people in Fed Hill, so you would think that they could support a grocery store. I know there's a new one opening up in South Baltimore, Mount Clair Station. It may have already opened, but it's on the way if it hasn't. After having been there, there was a Safeway there for the longest time, and then it was nothing for 10 years or something. And I know Councilwoman Felicia Porter had a lot to do with bringing that there. I mean, there's that Fresh Market or whatever it's called on St. Paul Street or Charles Street.
We have fresh,
near Saratoga.
Streets.
Okay. But it's hard making the people who run grocery stores are reluctant to place them in cities, in urban areas.
It's that, and now you think post-COVID, a lot of people shop online. So they're getting groceries delivered, and so it's making sure that we have the base. What I can say is yes, yes, and yes, we agree. This is not something that we're saying, like, we have the right formula right now, but what I will say is that is a priority. We know that we have to get those things, and to the point you were making, sometimes it's people, sometimes it's safety, sometimes it's, you know, theft. All of those things are things that we really need to figure out, not just in downtown, but in other parts throughout the city. That is a place that we really need to
practice. Downtown is by no means the only food desert in our beloved city. Shalonda Stokes is the president of the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore. We'll talk more about downtown on the other side of a quick break. You can join us at 410-662-8780, or you can drop us an email, midday@wipr.org. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the
side. I'm Al Waller.
I'm Catherine Collinson.
And I'm Mihaela Vince.
In upcoming episodes of Clear Path, Your Roadmap for Life, we'll discuss ways to catch up on retirement savings and the importance of self-care. Tune in to WIPR's website and mobile app, all major podcast platforms, and transamericainstitute.org.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WIPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on the show tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. We're going to talk politics, including the status of some of the Baltimore City Council races that are going on. There are a few that are pretty hotly contested. We'll talk about that with Hallie Miller of our news partner, the Baltimore Banner. The primary campaign season is coming to a close. The last day of early voting is today. And Election Day, of course, primary day next Tuesday, the 14th. Plus, tomorrow's show will include Jaywin Russick, who will review Miss Holmes, a show at the Fells Point Corner Theater. So that's on the way tomorrow. And if you've just joined us today, we're talking about the state of downtown and a report issued last month by the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore that assessed the residential, commercial, and business environment in the heart of our city. Shalonda Stokes is the president of the Downtown Partnership, and she joins me here in Studio A. You are welcome to join us as well. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. So, Shalonda, we have an email from a listener, Mark, who lives evidently in Roland Park, who says, I don't come downtown because of squeegee boys. Okay. So I have something to say to Mark, but I'm going to let you go first.
No, I want to invite Mark to come down. I know that the issue around squeegee is one that has plagued downtown for decades. I think that with the Squeegee Collaborative created by Mayor Scott, I think for the first time I know in my lifetime and in others I talk to, we've come to a process that doesn't criminalize poverty, but it does create opportunities for our young men and women to get in business, and it creates safety in downtown. We recognize that both things could be true. Like, people were fearful and people had incidents and there was need. And so working with the collaborative, it was how do we work together to disallow squeegeeing where we could for safety reasons and to continue to build on there. And I can tell you, and I welcome him to come down and see it. We are making improvements and the guys and girls are employed. We actually have a couple of them employed at Downtown Partnership.
Mm-hmm. Good. And so, Mark, you know, what my comment would be is that things do evolve, things change. And the squeegee situation, we had that terrible situation where the man was killed by a squeegee worker, Mr. Reynolds. It was awful, and it was in the news, but that was a while ago. And things have changed. Things have been addressed. The issue of the squeegee workers has been addressed. So it's a very different situation than it was, you know, 2 years ago, even a year ago. So I agree with Shalonda. I encourage you to come down and try things out in our city, because it doesn't say static. It's not
as
it was.
And it evolves. I know that, I mean, for some of the people who we've gotten employed, it's taken five tries. So people go out and you'll see upticks and we're doing it, but it is something that we work on consistently. Every Friday, we do a squeegee call. We have the high ranking within the police department, within the mayor's office, within partner organizations. We look at the data and we make adjustments, because part of it is how we want to make sure that we're getting resource to the people and that we are being responsive to our citizens as well.
Crime, you know, and the perception of crime in our city and any city is, you know, a major driver of whether people are going to use the assets that are there or not.
Right.
How do you think it's going? It's obviously something that the mayoral candidates are talking about. Even the congressional candidates are talking about it, because it's on everybody's mind.
Right. I mean, when you talk about collaboration starting from the top with Governor Moore on down, Mayor Scott, Commissioner Worley, part of what I love is that even in the area of safety, there's a priority around how we're doing this together. We see the results of that. We see the numbers going down, but we also know that that's not enough. And if people don't feel safe, regardless of whether the numbers go down, we need to do more. To that end, there are a number of initiatives that we're working on as well, with increased presence, bringing in partners, working together, new technology that will allow us to, you know, to really look at how we don't have to be everywhere, but allow technology to help us. All of those are things that we're working together on, so you will continue to see that decrease.
Because we have a listener, Rick, who says, I live in the suburbs, but my issue is safety. So what I don't see is foot patrols. And I've talked to the police commissioner about this. He's a big advocate of community policing, getting out, you know, having the patrol officers get out of their cars and talk to people. But I'm not sure when I go walking down there, I used to run down there, my knees won't let me do that anymore, but I still walk around the Inner Harbor, etc. You don't see cops walking around just hanging out and talking to folks. Are there more officers actually doing that? Maybe I'm just not noticing.
See, I hope you do see them. I think that we've been very intentional about that presence, because it matters, and there are different levels of what you see. We don't want downtown to feel like it's totally policed, and so there are varying types. There are some who are armed, some who are unarmed. We also have what we call Downtown Baltimore Guides, which provides more safety hospitality. We hire both private security, and we hire off-duty Maryland State Troopers. And part of it was to create sort of that broad presence, but not so overbearing, helpful, but still safe.
You mentioned the State Center complex, which has been finally cleared out, and Lord knows what's going to happen to it eventually. That's a different conversation. But those workers, about 5,000 of them in all, are being placed in offices around the downtown area. The comptroller's office is up and running. I think maybe there's 400 or so who are down there now.
Yes.
So that means another 20 or 4,600 workers are going to be in various places downtown. How long is that going to take, that transition?
So the last one that we're hearing is at the beginning of 26 right now, 25, 26 with the Department of Health. But throughout that time, between now and then, they are coming online. DHR, I know, within the next probably month at least. And so we should have you know, a sprinkling of them coming in. What's great about it, too, is they're coming in downtown partnership. We do something called Welcome Wagons because we want to make sure that they know the resources that are available to them, connect them to the restaurants and the retails that are open, and then also talk about some of the things that the listeners have said. People who come in, they want to understand about safety and transportation and parking and what are all of those things. So we want to make sure that we, you know, go on the road to welcome all of them in.
So those state workers, obviously, you know, are going to take up a lot of commercial office space. But you say in your report, when it comes to office and employment, mm-hmm. that the vacancy rates increased. So there's mm-hmm. there's fewer people in offices, but the available square footage Correct. Has actually decreased. And I guess that's because some of these offices are being converted to residential, right?
Right, because some are being converted to residential, and also because offices, they are converting their space, right? We have to, as a business community, also attract people to come in. As we talked about earlier, there are some people who can work completely from home. There are resources and reports that show the benefit of people working in office environments, especially younger ones where you're developing relationships. To that end, businesses are looking at how they step back and create work environments that make people want to be there. When we have, you know, all of these businesses along the water, most of what they will say is we want to create an environment that gets our team members excited about coming in here, and that takes up more space as well.
We have an email from Christopher, who lives in Charles Village, saying, having been to my share of community meetings in Charles Village, there's a reliable cadre of NIMBYs, N-I-M-B-Ys, mm-hmm. not in yeah. my backyard, naysayers that try to block all new development and generally succeed. Is downtown dealing with the same opposition, or does the newness of downtown as a living space mitigate a lot of those pressures? And of course, when it comes to NIMBYs or
right,
whatever.
It depends
Harbor
on
Place
the topic,
itself
right.
is a thing that's, you know, clearly very, very controversial. But I mean, what are you hearing from the businesses and the folks who have moved in there when it comes to extra developing, you know, the next stages of development?
So we look at that as a positive thing. I don't think that from the development, you're not getting the NIMBY challenge there. Where we do get NIMBY challenges with everything is as you start to look at resources and everything that are in downtown, you can have too much of something which feels like it's an overburden in that area. That's where we generally have challenge. But if we're putting cranes in the sky or we're doing some conversions or doing anything, the development community, I think, has really stood up. In part of the report, one of the things that we highlight is now $6.9 billion worth of development that is happening from really that Penn Station area all the way through the complex from, you know, through 2028. So development in that area is something that's good.
Now, I know you're not directly involved in the plans to redesign Harbor Place, mm-hmm. but we have this idea on the table,
yep.
MCB Real Estate and David Bramble. There is, you know, a lot of controversy about it. They're talking about building apartments right on the waterfront there in what is now the Light Street Pavilion. How do you see Harbor Place itself fitting into the overall downtown atmosphere, the vibe, and how do you see the planning? Because one of the things that struck me is that, you know, we've got people talking about maybe doing stuff around Camden Yards. We've got a lot of
yeah.
stuff going on in Harbor East and over on that area. I wonder if the city has an overall overarching plan. And if they do, I haven't figured it out yet. From, you know, Camden Yards through Harbor Place to the east side of town, where it's all connected and coordinated.
Yes, yes, and yes. No, so a couple of things. First, starting off with Harbor Place, I think part of what's so exciting for me personally, my first job was at Harbor Place. So at the age of 14, I was cleaning in there. So somewhat serendipitous to be having this type of conversation.
Now your office is across the street.
Now my office is across the street and responsible for these things downtown. But what is exciting about this and coming in, Tom, 3 years ago, whenever you had me on the radio show before, Harbor Place was not even, they were, what's going to happen? How is, you know, what's going? It's been, you know, dilapidated for years and people aren't paying attention. And so to have MCB come in, you know, with this idea and excite us all about it again is something that really just energizes me with that. The other part, when you talk about where that fits in, that's the heart of downtown, right? You have, whether it's, you look at boundaries and all of that, when people come, you are along the water and what Harbor Place did for that area is something that I think unites our city. People want to be around the harbor. Harbor East, Harbor, like, that is a selling point of our city. And so you look at how do you now, shine that jewel to something again. What MCB and team have really laid out, and I'm going to talk about David in a minute, is a plan that aligns exactly with what we've been talking about, a mix of residential and, you know, park space and business and retail, and it's all of those
things. He
hasn't
given up on retail. We've talked about that here.
No. And yeah. Right. And so all of that is a reflection of that. So those parts, and I think, you know, the city is excited about that. I think if there's any controversy that, you know, to what you reference, people talk about, well, what will the apartments look like on there? Should you privatize? Should you not? And all of that. Look across the country at what is happening to waterfronts and how they're able to sustain that mix. And when you think about the presence of residential in any area, the good news is you generally have more people in there, more activity, which increases safety. And so there are elements of this that we're excited really to push forward to hear. I know that there's a referendum that will go before everybody to really go in and make that vote. So those parts, I think, are just exciting around the next chapter of downtown.
Yeah, that referendum won't happen until the November election.
That happens in the November. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. In the November
election.
It
won't be on Tuesday's ballot. Right?
The thing that I did want to say, and I didn't want to leave off, David, I was talking about MCB, but a lot of, I think, the belief in this project also comes because you have a person who has grown his company tremendously, not just in Baltimore, but throughout, who loves this city, who lives in the same house that he used to. And so you have proven experience, you have worldwide vision, right? And bringing in there and somebody with a heart for the city. For that piece, we're, you know, it's let's lock arms and let's figure out how we get to a place that we all come and love this Harbor Place.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be excited about, and there's a lot to argue about, because people are
arguing
about it. You know, and one of the issues is transportation and parking. This is still a very car-oriented city.
Yeah.
It just is. I mean, I've been here 42 years, but I came from Boston, and I didn't have a car. There was a subway system and a light rail system that worked perfectly fine, and the car was an albatross. But, you know, being able to walk to places, and of course downtown, if there is a good grocery store, if there is, you know, the things you need just, you know, to live your life, that's going to work. But parking is an issue. People even talk about these apartments that he's thinking about building. He ends up building the apartments. Where do you park your car? If you're parking three blocks away and you go to the grocery store and you got four grocery bags to bring into your apartment, how do you do that? I mean, it's you got to figure this out.
So going to the place that you talked about with the master planning, the other thing that's happening now, the mayor recently launched an initiative called Downtown Rise that has some short-term, medium-term, and more longer-term elements that are in it. I think the longer-term piece of that is really around the planning and building all of those things in it. But the reason, you know, really want to highlight a lot of the development in those pieces that are happening in here is it's us figuring out collectively what we need downtown to be. We know how it was designed. It was designed before with, you know, crosswalks, bridges, and designed for cars, designed so that people were not on the street. And so there's a transition that we have to take the city through. And in that process, want to make sure that we are not kicking people out, but bringing them along. And so transition, that type of transition generally takes longer, but it's more equitable, it's more lasting, sustainable, and man, is that impactful.
Yeah, it's hugely impactful. Just got a minute or so left. Tourism is up, too.
Yes.
Visit Baltimore. Looks like we're at pre-COVID tourism levels. That's good news.
We are. I know. And let Al, you know, you talked with Al, because I know his team
Al
is
Hutchinson,
Al Hutchinson.
Yeah.
They're working extremely hard to bring in the numbers, to bring in the large conferences. I mean, we are really trying to maximize on that. But to what Al would tell you, and we need more. And we need more budget. And so, you know, just trying to build on the wins.
Yeah, because it used to be if, you know, somebody was at the convention center for a conference, they'd bop over to the Inner Harbor to do stuff. And now there's very little to do with the Inner Harbor. So it's
for,
tough.
For now. So one of the things in the interim, because Harbor Place isn't there, so I highlighted we are going announcing Boost Light, but they are reactivating Harbor Place in the interim because we know that is a center point. We do want people who go to the convention center and other things to have a place to go.
Yeah, because it's going to take a while to whatever happens at Harbor Place. It isn't going to happen next year. It's going to happen after a while. Shalonda Stokes is the president of the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore. It's always good to see you, and we will check in regularly to hear how things are going downtown.
I look forward to it.
Me too.
Thanks so much.
Up next, the acclaimed classical composer Nico Muhly joins me. His music is featured in a concert at the Emmanuel Episcopal Church tomorrow night. We will preview that event when we come back from a quick break. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stick around.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.